From the News Talk STL studios in St. Louis, it's the Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter. On tonight's episode, making movies with film producer Dan Paris. And are cicadas a sign of the apocalypse? We'll talk to Chris Hartley of the Butterfly House and the Right Mind studio band Mitch Murphy and the Murphy Tones. Now, putting the fun in your dysfunctional world, here's your host, Todd Showalter.
This is really, really weird. I didn't think I was going to start the show this way, but I'm not making this up. I cannot find any of my underpants. Okay, now, I mean, I am wearing underpants now, okay, because it's like the last pair I could find, and I had to dig throughout. It was like my sock drawer and things like that. But this is not a joke. This is not a joke, because a lot of my stuff is missing or thrown out or whatever, because I'm not going to bring it my wife, but she likes donating a lot of my stuff to places that don't want it. But this morning, I don't know where any of my underpants are. I don't know if my sock drawer or where I usually keep them, if everything's been rearranged, and I don't know where my stuff is, but I cannot find any of my underpants. And I don't know if that's a good way of starting the show, but I just got to get it out of my way, because it's really kind of, I don't know what my feeling is, right? I've never had this happen before. Have you ever lost any of your undergarments?
Well, when I was a little kid, I remember you'd get underpants one day a year, and that was on Christmas.
Right.
It's the only time you get underpants. And if anything happened between Christmas one year and the next one, you were just out of luck.
Yeah, right.
You didn't have anything except that waistband. But when I became an adult, I got money, and then I could buy my own underpants. Do you think that could fix this problem, or do we need to get to the bottom of the case first?
I'm not even at the point of buying new underpants. I want to know what happened to my other ones. And this is not like some, okay, I'm going to talk about this, and it's going to be ha-ha. This is a serious subject, because they couldn't have been donated, because you can't donate your underpants to like Goodwill or a thrift store. I certainly wouldn't buy underwear from a thrift store.
I don't want to get too personal, but I don't know you well enough. Now, there is a chance.
What do you mean you don't know me? You know me better than I know me.
Well, if you're like my girl and you wear thongs, there's a chance that maybe you just have a wedgie. And it just got sucked up into the nethers.
You wear
boxer briefs, or
they're not boxers. They're not boxers, because they don't give me that control I like.
The red thermal ones with the poop chute in the back?
Yeah, that will. No, that's the one my grandparents
gave. Oh, okay.
And I say grandparents because it was a joint gift. But they
Long johns.
I don't know. But the underpants are gone. I don't think, this is going to be on a Saturday, so if anybody knows, I'm sure I would have found them by now. This has nothing to do with the show. I'm going to move on, but I did want to get it out.
You don't want to at least describe them in case anybody sees them? Do an all points bulletin, an APB on your BVDs?
Okay, there are multiple colors, because multiple colors. And all the elastic is like, frayed, and it looks horrible. You want to hear an underpants story, by the way. My bachelor party, okay, this is a good segue, and I didn't even mean for
this. This was in the 80s, so it was wild back then.
No, it was like the 90s, actually.
Oh, okay.
It was even wilder back then. But the last time I was at a strip club was my allowed to say was my bachelor party. And get this, okay? This was the craziest thing. I was dragged up onto the stage, okay? And she put me down on my hands and knees. True story. I have witnesses in the whole nine yards.
Coffee table position.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think she put like a cup of coffee, a mocha, on my back. And the next thing you know, she has her teeth on the elastic part of my underpants. She rips it out, rips the elastic out with her teeth, takes the elastic and wraps my arms behind my back and starts spanking me in front of all my friends. Wasn't that something to remember?
Oh, my goodness. What gives the East Side a bad name. You go to PTs and you lose your BVDs.
Right.
Yeah. It's your SOL.
There you are, SOL. And here's the best part. I got home, okay, and I didn't get sick or anything on my bachelor party, but I did know that my underpants were down to my knees underneath my pants because I had no elastic. So I had to pretend I didn't feel good. And I put the pants underneath the sink, which stayed there for the whole duration of the time in our apartment there. And she finally found them when she moved. And then I was able to tell her the story.
I've been doing an experiment. I bought a 7-pack from Amazon. And each
seven-pack? What's seven that
pack,
now?
A 7-pack of undies from Amazon. And they each have the different days of the week. And I strictly stay to those days, and I only wear them on those days. And so at the end of the year, I'm going to find out which day is the most stressful based on which ones have the most, marks or rips or whatever.
Marks?
Yeah, I think right now it's looking like it's Thursdays. I don't know what I do on Thursdays.
Right.
I mean, this show is live.
Oh, actually, I think we tape our show on Thursdays.
That's
probably why. But you know, did you remember Granimals? Remember those Granimals, those clothes?
You could be a superhero, right? Is that part of it?
No, you would have to match. Okay, mm-hmm. And I guess if you were a stupid kid, I mean, you just look like you were. Well, you would know because you're stupid because you're not matched. But I think old people ought to bring back the Granimals because you'd have like a, you know, like an orangutan top and you'd match it to the orangutan bottom. And, you know, if you had like a giraffe top and you matched it to the pig bottom, then you were flummoxed. Okay. But I think old people, because I don't know if you noticed, like old people don't care what they wear anymore. It's just a matter of being, you know, warm or being comfortable because they'll walk around with like things that don't match and things. And so I think if we brought back the Granimals for old people, that might be a good thing. Have you ever visited a nursing home?
Mm-hmm.
This is really
when I was a Boy Scout, we had to go sing carols at them, and they were very hard of hearing and did not appreciate it.
And they forget too, so you can sing the carol. You only need one, mm-hmm. okay? Because you can sing the one carol, they'll forget what you sang, and you can do it all over again. I used to do magic shows, believe it or not, at nursing homes, and it was easy because you could screw something up, and you could say, "Hey, look, it disappeared," and they'd say, "What?" And trust me, it disappeared because they couldn't see or hear. So, yeah, that was fun. You know the best part, though? They would always have somebody in the front that would fall asleep, and they'd say, "Oh, Elmer, you're sleeping." I go, "No, he's not sleeping. He's hypnotized."
You know, there's a show on Netflix. It's hosted by Justin Willman. He's from St. Louis, very famous magician, and his show is called The Magic Prank Show.
Right.
And he would go to couples and find out what the wife wanted to do to the guy to get back at him. And so they would, you know, send him into the porta potty, blow him up, think he was dead, and then the wife would freak out.
Oh, yeah.
And my girlfriend thought this show was so romantic. She said, "If you were to fake your death like this on TV for the whole world to see how much you hate me, I think that would be the biggest sign that you love me, and I want to go on this show if they have a season two."
Oh, hang on. Now, it would be a sign of romance if you faked your death. And this is what your girl wants you to do. Fake your death. Now, what is the point of this?
It's just really relieving when the person freaks out. And you're watching on a camera backstage and you're seeing them lose their S and say, "Oh my gosh, I actually did love her. Bring her back." When the death is faked, you get to watch on the screen backstage and see it is true love.
Oh, I see. So the person thinks the person's dead, but mm-hmm. they're not. What if it's the opposite? What if they're really happy you're dead? Because I bet you I know a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I showed you that thing that guy sent me this morning. He said, "Here's a picture of you."
He drew a caricature of you. Yeah, it was lifelike.
It was a piece of poop.
It was a piece of poop.
It was a piece of poop. And he goes, "Is this you, Todd Showalter?" And I was like, "Well, wait, I don't think the color was right, mm-hmm. but I don't think the rest of it was right." So I think there's a lot of people that would be quite excited if they found out I wasn't in the living anymore.
I don't know if they air those episodes if the people get too happy that their spouse died on TV. I think they say, "Chill out. If you want to buy this footage back, they're actually alive. It's going to cost you $1 million.
Well, what would you do then? And what if you were the guy or the girl or whatever, and you're waiting for the other person to be all upset and excited when you came back? Meantime, they're remarried and they're out having a good time. I mean, then that would really ruin your day, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. I think that's the best part of the prank. If you pretend dead for the entire year and watch them grieve and then get remarried, and then right there when the pastor asks, "Is there anyone that objects?" you just come out of the rafters, Tom Sawyer style, and say, "I do.
I got you.
I got castawayed, and where's the shrimp?"
That Tom Sawyer stuff. Have you ever been to Hannibal, Missouri?
I went once to watch wrestling with my mom.
Okay.
She's involved with independent wrestling a little bit. Because
your mom wrestles?
Her boy toy wrestles.
Her boy toy
She's
wrestles.
More of a ring girl that collects the robes when the guys throw them off.
Your mom does this?
Yeah, we went to one of those Legion Hall type places, an armory actually in Hannibal, and we watched some people grab butts, as they call it.
So wait a minute, because we do have Mother's Day coming up tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
okay? I mean, that's Mother's Day. So your mom is a wrestling aficionado. Mm-hmm. You like that word? Aficionado.
We grew up watching Monday Night Raw together, and she ended up meeting a guy that was a professional wrestler, and so we still bond over that to this day.
Okay, so your mom, you've never told me this mm-hmm. little nugget.
Deep dark secret.
Deep dark secret. So now, do you, like, you know, just get together with your mom? Now, are they... Is this like your stepdad, or are they just like in a relationship?
It's been a 22-year not marriage situation.
I gotcha.
So, I think they're engaged, okay. But that's been 15 of those years.
Well, do you ever say, hey, stepdad that's not my stepdad, mm-hmm. You want to go at it? I mean, do you like just start brawling and breaking chairs over this guy?
We used to do that on the PlayStation. We'd break out the wrestling video games, and I'd defeat him every time.
Really? Mm-hmm. Now, what is his wrestling name?
It was one of those Mad Max type names. You know, that was really big when Mad Max came out. People would dress up in leather with their leftover bondage clothes and like, no, it's not for kinky stuff. I'm Mel Gibson. Look at me.
Enough of my underpants.
His name was Road Warrior, or just Warrior. One of those two.
Wow. So your mom dates the Road Warrior. Mm-hmm. Now, does your mom have a wrestling name too?
Her name is Michelle, but she spells it with one L.
Get out of here.
That's why it's fancy.
Wow. That's WWE stuff right
there.
Her
Lady M. That's a good name.
Lady M is good.
Yeah.
Well, so in Hannibal, though, so aside from this wrestling, they have Tom Sawyer also, but they also have like this Mark Twain stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been, frequented in any of this?
I've been in Becky Thatcher, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, baby.
There's a riverboat here on the Mississippi in St. Louis called the Becky Thatcher.
I know. Yeah. I know. It used to be a showboat. I actually played on it.
Whoa.
I did.
That's incredible.
I like to do incredible things. Even better when I have my underpants.
What instrument were you playing?
Well, that goes back to my underpants thing.
The tissue box with the one rubber band.
It was something like that. It was like a folksy thing. There was a guy in town that used to be like an anchor person. I bet you Larry Connors knows him. John Auble, but he's dead now. I think he used to own the Becky Thatcher.
Mm-hmm. John Auble, I remember he owned Garfield as well.
He owned Garfield.
Oh, that's Arbuckle. Never mind.
Same thing. Mm-hmm. I think they kind of resembled each other or something like that. Well, anyway, Hannibal, and I know we have listeners there, as a matter of fact, but they have like, because I believe this is like the Bowling Green, Hannibal, St. Louis, Louisiana, Miami, Florida.
And the 94.1 signal is huge. People all over the world love the Right Mind Show.
Yeah, well, I think they do, and if they don't, they should. That's like Joe Biden. You know, apparently, and now we've really digressed in a new direction now, but apparently people are finally telling Joe how much they hate him, okay, and he won't believe it. This has nothing to do with Hannibal, by the way, but if it did, it wouldn't. But anyway, they're telling him now. Apparently CNN said to him, do you realize, and CNN, you know what they are. They're a bunch of communists. They told him, do you realize how unpopular you are, and he just won't believe it. Can you imagine going through life? I should do this because a lot of people send me pictures of poop saying, do you know that's you? Mm-hmm. I should just pretend like this person loves me. I mean, how can you be that naive that if somebody tells you that? And that's what Joe is. I mean, apparently he doesn't get it that people don't like him. I mean, what do we have to do to prove it to him?
He said he's a big D Democrat, and someone else like, no, you're a small D. This guy over here, you got a small D.
He's got D. The D is in like breast size? Or
D. No, I think it's short for D. Wiener.
Oh, okay. Well, you would, if he was missing his underpants, like let's get to the bottom of this. I mean, can we just like, if anybody's listening out there, if you could call in right now, even though the shape is taped, show is taped. I'm losing my memory in my speech now. My Shay is taped. My show is taped. Whatever. Give me a call, will you? And it'll be too late, but hopefully I would have found it by then. That's probably at a thrift store. And a thrift store is someplace I was going to have to go this weekend anyway, because I'm looking for a new armoire.
Oh, my goodness. I went to a thrift store and bought swimming trunks once. I don't know if that counts as wearing filthy underwear.
It does.
But, yeah, when you buy furniture, that's also filled with farts just as much as
underwear. Oh, it definitely is.
Well, underwear.
I won't buy any clothes from a thrift store because I got to tell you, I know it's all dead people stuff.
If you get an armoire full of farts, I think you should just flip the cushion. You'll be all right.
What is an armoire? I just wanted to say that word.
You know what? Now that I'm thinking of it, I think that's what holds clothes is an armoire. Now that I'm thinking of...
You put your arm in it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
To Kill a Mockingbird, I think the whole trial was about this guy who cut up an armoire.
Attican Finch or something like that.
Maybe I was thinking of a Schiffer robe.
Yeah, Schiffer robe, something like that. You know, my wife.
Ottoman, go on.
Ottoman. Oh, yeah, but you put your head on that, don't you? Or your feet, something, one or the other. She gave away, because she wanted to get new plates. You know, my wife, I'm not allowed to bring up. Now, I brought her up several times.
Yeah, send her to the DMV.
Yes. Well,
quick going to the thrift store.
Well, that's what I told her. I said, and make sure to get 2 years this time. She goes, not those kind of apple. Oh, she didn't talk like that. She's like, not those kind of plates. I want the kind of plates that you eat off of. She has an English accent.
Pinkies
too.
Up.
Yeah, pinkies up. So we went to like Sam's, all right, and got these because, you know, we're big spenders. And Sam's, a big box store, they had like a, you know, eight of them in a box. And I mean, that's good. And they were paper too. I picked them out. She says, no, we can't have these. We need real ones. So we went and got those, but she decided she was going to throw all the other ones away. One of them was my favorite plate. Okay, I had this favorite plate that was, it's like a square, and I could put my snacks on it. And it was my, you know, I'd lay all my snacks out on it. It was like a nice presentation before I'd eat it, and it would just sit there. Anyway, it's gone because she decided she was going to donate that to the thrift store. And guess what I did? I went back to the thrift store to buy it back, and someone else had already bought it. You know what that means, don't you? It means it was valuable. Mm-hmm. It means someone else saw the value in it that I did. And now is enjoying snacks off of it and probably has my underpants. I don't know. I have no idea.
My mom got me thrift store plates once, wondered why they were at the thrift store. They look perfectly good. When I put it in the microwave, it started sparking.
Oh, yeah.
She got me gold plated plates. They had gold around the rim, and you can't even microwave those.
Oh, what's the point?
I don't know. So I immediately threw those out. Yeah.
Have you ever thrown something in the microwave you shouldn't have?
Yeah, aluminum foil, wrapped baked potato all the time. I thought it would quick cook.
Have
quick,
you ever put
cook,
like
just as quick?
Just throwing like a handful of paper clips in.
That's no,
a,
never
that's a,
that.
That's a good. Oh, that's a good time. It's really if it's like the 4th of July and you don't have fireworks, it's a good close second. We got a lot of fun coming up here later on today. We got Dan Paris that's going to be joining us. He has a new film out called Vision, and it's I've seen the trailer. It's really really pretty impressive. It's better than anything I could do on my iPhone. In the meantime, I'm Todd Showalter along with my good buddy Joey V. This is The Right Mind Show. We'll be right back.
Coming up next on The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter, filmmaker Dan Paris talks about what it takes to make money from an independent film.
Hey, it's Todd Showalter with my buddy Joey V on The Right Mind Show, and it's almost Mother's Day, so we're going to call my mom and see what she thinks of the show.
Todd, honey, are you in jail again?
Mom, it's me and Joey. What's your favorite part of the show?
Oh, are you still doing that Right Mind Show? I think it's on the same time as my story.
It's on at 5 o'clock on Saturdays. It's after Matlock, Mom, so you can...
That's nice, sweetie. When are you going to come visit me?
All right, Mom, for Mother's Day, I promise I'll come over and visit you sometime. In the meantime, why don't you visit us on Saturday nights at 5 o'clock for the Right Mind Show, please?
Welcome back to The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter on News Talk STL. And now a man who loves craft services so much that he's constantly early onset diabetes. Todd Showalter.
And we're back. I'm Todd Showalter along with my buddy Joey V. Mitch in the background doing his Mitch thing. And sitting next to me now to my left is Dan Paris, one of the finest filmmakers in St. Louis. I would say even beyond St. Louis. You have a new film out, a short film called Vision. And I got to tell you, I saw the trailer. It's fantastic. Just get into it. Tell me the story about Vision.
Well, there's a nonprofit in North St. Louis called Love the Lou. And they have been doing like housing work, work with youth, a lot of really awesome stuff in North St. Louis to help improve just what's going on there. And they contacted me and they said, hey, can you make a documentary about what we've done over the last 10 years? And I'm like, okay, well, show me the footage and everything you got. And they're like, well, we've got nothing. I'm like, all right, well, we can't make a documentary without any stuff you've already, I can't go back in time or whatever. So I thought about, I'd really love to tap into fiction because most of my my background is in documentary. And so came up with this concept of, you know, what about putting on glasses and seeing the potential around you. I had done a lot of mentoring with students from Roosevelt High School through a program called Young Life. Mm-hmm. And part of what we do, we bring these kids, we do a meal, we'd have a lot of fun, give a talk, and then you had to drive kids all around St. Louis home in parts of St. Louis I'd never been before. You know, and I remember dropping this one kid off. Every house on the street was boarded up but his. And I'm dropping this high school kid off in the dark in this area that I'm like, I don't feel safe. I can't imagine he feels safe, but this was his norm, you know? Right. And I was like, why are we all just accepting that, you know, this is our city, that our city has such a difference, you know, you cross that Del Mar divide, that Page divide, there's just such a opportunity difference, so many differences. And so I just thought, what if, you know, we could see the potential by putting on these like magical glasses, what could be. And the goal was to show what this nonprofit was doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, so basically when the kid put on the glasses, you could see the impact that this nonprofit's already having, but you could see kind of the before and after.
Right. Okay. So one of the things we talked about, Adam Boester was on our show, I guess, it was probably about 2 or 3 months ago. And you look at your trailer, and I assume the film is this way also, I mean, it's got such a high level of professionalism, everything that's put together with it. I mean, the trailer alone, I mean, that's almost as better than some of the some films I've seen. What does it take to put something like that together? Because I know here in the St. Louis film community, there are, you know, a lot of films being made. But there's a difference between, okay, I'm just going to go out and do it as a hobby that there's nothing wrong with, and what you've done. What would you say, I mean, what did it take to actually put this together?
Well, you know, the big thing, it comes down to money, right?
Right, right.
Like, I would say the budget we had for this short film is more than some people are making their features on, you know? Mm-hmm. And so then you're asking for favors, then you're working on weekends. Maybe you're not working with the, you know, the people that are the most experienced or have the nicest equipment, that kind of thing. And so, unfortunately, you got to fund the arts to have really good quality arts,
sure.
You know, for me to get the best equipment, the best people, you know, to hire really top-notch people who are working on, like, big commercials, other big projects, you know, they want to be paid. They,
sure.
they have experience. And so I think that's a big thing. I think also, you know, what it took is we had to wait. We had to wait a couple of years to figure out how we were going to get the money. Like, I think a lot of people are just like, I want to make this movie. I'm going to make it now, no matter how I get to it.
Right.
And they get it done, but it doesn't get done to a level which they were like, hey, that's as good as I could do. It's like, that's what I could do with what I had. And I was like, with this project, let's try to wait till we get the funding so that we can do this right and do it the way we want to do it. You know?
Okay. How long did it take you actually make the film?
So we kind of came up with the concept in early 2020 or even 2019. Then we shot a teaser so that we could build a pitch deck.
Right.
So we shot one scene from the film, and then it took us, we did that in about, you know, by the end of 2020. And then so we spent 2021, 2022 really trying to raise the money, and then finally got the funding in 2023. So in reality, this is about a 4-year project from start to finish.
Okay.
And it's only a 20-minute film, so it kind of shows you the amount of time and work that goes into that. You know?
Right, sure. Okay, now as far as the talent, was this a union film or was it union and non-union?
No, all non-union. So we did a casting call locally,
okay.
And both our leads are local actors.
Okay, great. Well, there are a lot of things you're obviously going to be, when is the premiere? Because you're doing
the premiere is May 18th. Unfortunately, it's sold out.
Right,
but one cool thing is that we got a grant from the Missouri Humanities Council to do a screening series.
Okay.
So for us, this wasn't just about making this really cool film. It was about starting conversations. Mm-hmm. And so our plan is to do 20 to 30 screenings around St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking for other places that want to show the film, have panel discussions like we're going to have, Q&As, that kind of thing.
Okay, because you mentioned before, you've done a lot of documentary work, and one of them I was telling Joey off the air. You're when you were in Africa, it was like a dollar a day. I remember you talking about that. And one of the things you did after that was like you mentioned, you did a lot of follow up and discussions and things like that. What I mean, how does this equate to what you did on the documentary side to what you're doing with this?
Well, with the documentaries, that was a feature-length film,
mm-hmm.
right? So it kind of opens up more doors. Those are usually taken seriously, you know, if you have a 60-minute or longer film.
Mm-hmm.
We did about 100 community screenings, college screenings all around the country.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this has the potential to do that. I mean, in some ways, having a 20-minute film leaves so much more time for conversation. You watch an hour and a half film, and then you're kind of tired, and, you know, how much do you have another hour to talk about it? But I think with the 20-minute film, it opens up a lot of doors for that. One of our goals, there's a nonprofit in the film, but we called it Love for the City. We didn't want to call it Love for the Lou after the initial organization that we made it for.
Right.
Because we wanted to, even they wanted it to expand outside of just St. Louis. Like, a lot of cities have this kind of conversation they need to have, you know, whether that's Memphis or Cleveland or Chicago.
Right.
Every city in America has this underinvested in, neglected parts of their city that I think we all need to have, you know, there needs to be a big vision for.
Gotcha. Well, without giving too much away, I mean, when the lead character, when he sees what the potential is, do you think there are any things that could actually, you know, transpire in St. Louis that could, you know, could some of this actually come to a reality? I mean, what are some of the things that possibly could be?
Well, for example, there is a organization in the city of St. Louis called the LRA. Mm-hmm. And the LRA has about 10,000 homes that you can buy for like nothing if you have a plan on how you can remodel them. And so we actually film some of these buildings in St. Louis. So some of the buildings you see this kid see with his glasses, mm-hmm. he sees them transformed. You could buy that building and transform it yourself and make it an active business, an active home. And a lot of people are doing this, but there's so much more need for people interested in investing in areas like North St. Louis and working with these organizations. So that's an example. In one scene, he sees an urban garden, you know, and where he just sees an overgrown lot with trash. Next thing he knows, he sees a diverse group of people making a garden in there. Mm-hmm. And that's something that people are actually doing in North St. Louis and that Love the Lou is actually doing. So some of the things are all the things are happening, but to what degree and to what amount, that's really the question, you know?
Okay. I mean, so as far as some of these developments, I mean, you mentioned the north side. Now, I did some stuff like Habitat for Humanity and things. And there's such great architecture, for one, in some of these communities that it's a shame that, you know, they can't be, you know, renovated. Do you think, I mean, again, without giving too much away, and you mentioned there are some things you're doing with the housing, are there specific areas in the film that you're focusing on that you say you'd like to see, that have the potential to be revitalized?
Well, the one of the initial scenes is this old church right near Grand and St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And there is a guy there. He bought this church for like the back taxes, basically. And he's been working for the last 3 or 4 years to remodel this church. I don't know his exact plans for it, but there are people like him who just need, his name's Ben Klein, just need support, you mm-hmm. know, just need people to come out, you know, whether it's volunteering or, you know, financially or investing, whatever it is. I think there's a lot of like doers, but we need like a greater interest in investment, you know, and there's just so many we have tons of nonprofits in St. Louis. We're a very philanthropic city. Mm-hmm. But I think it just takes, you know, in my mind, this big, crazy idea, something that's just like, we're done. We're not going to let this be like this anymore. Let's all put our heads together. Mm-hmm. Let's invest what we got to do. And I think, you know, there's different things happening. I saw Tajara Jones say she was going to give $250,000 from the ARPA funds to invest in North St. Louis. So some big crazy thing like that. And that's one of the questions I want to ask people when they see this film. What would you do with $250,000,000?
Oh, yeah.
I said $250,000, but it's actually $250,000,000. How would you invest that? And I think that's the question is where do we go? But it takes all of us having interest in doing that and getting together to figure it out.
Well, one thing, you know, I guess it was about 4 years ago. I'm not going to name drop, but there's a real prominent person from St. Louis. And we had I spoke with him about, on the north side, what about a possible film studio? I mean, because you look at all the things that brings to a community, not just from the, you know, the glamour, glitz and things like that, but you have, you know, you're putting carpenters to work, you have your surrounding stores, things like that. But if you were to revitalize that area because of all the architecture and all because of all the locations that have that are similar to other areas and things like that, why? Because you look what's happening in Oklahoma, you look at what's happening in Louisiana, you look what happened in Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta's huge now. Why could St. Louis not be another hub? And I think you do have the talent, you do have, you know, from the crew and on the acting side. Why, you know, if you were to invest some of that money into the north side and revitalize it, we were looking into it, and unfortunately it stalled, as a lot of things do. But is that something you see as possibly, because you're huge in the St. Louis film scene? Do you think that's something that could be?
Well, funny enough, I actually toured a space in North St. Louis with a bunch of the people that could kind of make something like that happen. And then after we toured it, they're like, all right, like, so who's going to come and spend all the money here? Like,
right.
And like, you know, Amazon, Netflix, I'm like, I don't know. Like at the time we didn't have the tax credit, you know?
Right.
And I think people look at these buildings that could become a movie studio and they're like, that seems very risky. Why don't we just make it apartments? You know what I mean? And because housing is a really, everybody needs a house and that's an easy way to solve. So I think it's going to take one, the new tax credit is huge. So the mm-hmm. new tax credit, if you don't know, basically, if you spend a certain amount on a film in Missouri and spend a certain amount of taxes, you can get a rebate and a tax credit, and then you can sell that tax credit. And that basically can increase producers' budgets significantly. We are the first Missouri filmmakers to get the new tax credit, and that gave us another 30 to 35% on our budget, right? So, like, that's going to bring productions here, but I think we also need to make really good projects. Like, I think if, let's say Vision, for example, Vision could get into a major festival or something, that might bring some attention. Or one of these features, like if somebody out of St. Louis can make something that gets picked up by Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, you know, one of these platforms, that could really draw attention. So I think we need to both make really good work so that people see, you know, people are only going to start a studio in North St. Louis if they see some kind of return.
Right.
So we have to prove that we can make stuff that will make money, that will get seen, and that's quality. And I'm hopeful we can do it. But at the same time, you know, I think that's also not going to hold anybody back from doing their projects.
Sure. And you hit something on the head there. And it's got to be financially. I mean, you're looking at the financial aspects, because I think a lot of people have good intentions. I mean, we're going to put out, you know, something that's high quality art. It's great, you know, and all that. But if you're putting something, you have to almost look at it from a commerce standpoint, where how is this going to, you know, as a whole, boost the revenue in that particular area? And I think, you know, again, if that's the strategy that you take and say, look, this is not just going to be for art's sake, which is great, but we're still going to be able, it's without making it like an industry city. I mean, we have the same types of things. We have different occupations that could be, they'll be part of this. Again, I mentioned carpenters, you have electricians, any type of other city that has a major studio that they've built, they've relied on a lot of other outside services. And I think that's kind of the way St. Louis would have to be, right? Because if you have a lot of people think, oh, why do I want to invest in a studio if it's all art? Well, no, this is going to be revenue for the city. And I mean, do you agree? I mean, do you think you kind of got to put the art on?
Yeah, I think what's cool about film is it relies on everybody. You would need people to build sets. So you would need contractors. You need electricians. You need, you know, artists, but you also need restaurants to bring the food. So there's, it builds a little village for whether that's a short film like ours, you know, 4 or 5 days, or a feature film that can be weeks at a time, or a TV show that can be months at a time, right? But I think we need something consistent enough. I'm thinking a TV show, something like that. So there's like, okay, there's regular work happening here. This studio will be used over and over and over again. And we just, that hasn't happened yet. But I know, you know, like Andrea Sporsik, who's in the Missouri Film Office, I mean, she hears about all these big ideas coming. And I'm, you know, it just takes, you know, a few people to decide, hey, that's the place to make something. And I think Film and Mo, which is used to be MoMA, this is the organization that's doing advocacy work for the state of Missouri to get us to keep the tax credits, right? I think one thing is we need to get films here using the tax credits for them to see the value in the tax credits to like not let it disappear again like it did for 10 years after like Up in the Air and Gone Girl. So yeah, I think it could be huge. I would love that. It would be great for me. I plan to stay in St. Louis.
Sure,
you know, I would love to have a studio and something like that. But I think it's, we're still kind of in our infancy or our rebirth of this industry. So we'll see what happens. But you know, to kind of really go back to your question, is like a lot of filmmakers say, like, dude, my film is so awesome and artistic. It's like, well, how's it going to make money?
Right.
Whose problem is it going to solve? Like, you know, who's it going to entertain? Who's going to pay for it? And that was what this film was great, because I was like, okay, I know this is solving a problem for this nonprofit. I know this is providing value to our presenting sponsor. I know we're going to go out there and show it in the community and even potentially charge for that, have our speakers paid. I think it's okay to charge for your art. And there's just kind of a crooked system in filmmaking where you get this distributor that you give your film to and then they take all the money and you never see anything.
Right, sure.
So it's just a, it's a really difficult art, but I think it's the same time, like, we can't be complainers, because it's like complaining that you get to be in a rock band. You know, it's like,
oh, sure.
Hey, you're making music, you're making movies. Like, yeah, you might not be making that much money, but how cool is your job, right?
Right. Well, you've been doing it a long time, and you're, like I said, you're a very big part of the St. Louis film community. What's your background? I mean, how did you even get into film?
Well, my background is just a kid, like, you know, pre-streaming, I remember there was this place where I could get 5 movies for 5 days for $5, you know, and get all these VHSs and just watch the crap out of some movies. And I was that's what I want to do. You know, when I get older, I want to make movies. But it was, I want to make movies not just to entertain, but to, like, make a difference in the world. I had a kind of a dramatic conversion to Christianity at 16, where I left this, like, drug, you know, little thug lifestyle, you know, little criminal. And everything changed for me. And I was like, I want to give back. I want to be involved in making a difference. And so that led to making videos for my church, which then led to making documentaries about social justice issues. And so, like, the film you mentioned earlier, What Matters, about me and my friends trying to live on a dollar a day in extreme poverty, that came from my own personal visit to the second largest slum in Africa. Mm-hmm. And I left there and I met people living on a dollar a day and now I'm buying $5 coffees.
Right.
Like, how is this the same world?
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm still friends on Facebook with some of the people I met on that journey, right? And we are connected, but our lifestyles, our experiences are so different, but I can make such a personal impact just with the little money I had. And so I decided that I want to use film to make a difference and went out to film school in LA, produced that first film you're talking about, did a few other documentaries, and now I make a living making videos for nonprofits. Mm-hmm. So okay. I help them raise money. You know, if you go to a big gala and you see that video that makes you cry right before you pull out your wallet, like I try to make those videos, and that's just good practice for the bigger projects and the other projects I want to do.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I mean, as far as if anybody wants to get, is there any way that people could reach out to you and help any way with some of these organizations that you're affiliated with?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't have like a page on my website where you can say, okay, here's all the nonprofits. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one way people can help out with the film, the vision film, and really just start this conversation, which I don't think films make like change the world, but I think conversations can come from films. And I think conversations can lead to relationships, mm-hmm. and those relationships can help change the world. So my goal is to really start this important, not start it, but continue it. Bring it to new places, this conversation about what does it take to make our city have more vision for our city. So if people are interested in that, they go to visionthefilm.com.
Okay.
That's visionthefilm.com. And then, there's on my company's website is speakupstudios.com.
Right, sure. Okay.
You can see a lot of the different nonprofits we worked with. We've worked with a lot of great nonprofits. So today's Give STL Day. I don't know if this is actually coming out on then. We're recording it on Give STL Day. So
that's the day
we all come together to give to nonprofits. So, yeah.
Great. Okay. Well, it's been great talking with you. And again, I can't wait to see Vision, which again, I've seen the trailer. It's amazing. And when it is making the rounds, I hope that you'll let me know and let us know so that we can promote it some way to get other people out to see it. In the meantime, I'm Todd Showalter along with my buddy Joey V. Mitch in the background. Dan Paris to my left. This is The Right Mind Show. We'll be right back.
Coming up next on The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter, Eric Hartley from the Butterfly House lets us know if we should be scared of the upcoming cicada infestation. Welcome back to The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter on Newstalk STL. And now a man who loves bugs so much he once got twice as high with that butterfly from Reading Rainbow, Todd Showalter.
And we're back. I'm Todd Showalter along with my buddy Joe Evie. And on the line right now from the Butterfly House is Chris Hartley. And we're going to talk a little bit about this cicada situation we have coming up. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I'd do better, though, if we didn't have all these bugs that were going to show up, because a lot of people are kind of creeped out about it. What is the deal with these cicadas, and why do they only come out every 13 years, and why are people frightened of them?
Sure. So it's a bit understandable because it's a bit of an overwhelming kind of sight to see trillions of cicadas come out of the ground, millions in St. Louis City alone.
Yeah.
So I get why people are a little unsettled by that. But it's really, if you look at it from the other side, it's a miraculous natural phenomenon that only occurs every 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one particular kind of cicada that waits 13 years between emergences, unlike the ones that we get every single summer here. And that's why there's so very, very many of them, too.
Okay, one thing I don't understand, are they alive? Or do they just stay underground for 13 years and then wait? And how do they even know when 13 years is up? I mean, I don't understand how this all works.
Sure. So they're alive the whole time they're underground. They're actually the immatures, the babies, if you will. And they're feeding and growing during that 13 years. And as far as how they know when 13 years have passed, it's just hardwired into their genes. It's something that they have evolved to do over the millions of years that they've been in existence. And there's other kinds that only come out every 17 years.
No, well, is this like a regional thing, or are they all? Does this happen all over the country?
It happens all over the eastern U.S. And there's actually several different broods of these cicadas. The one that's coming out this year last came out here 13 years ago, but there are others that will come out in different parts of the eastern U.S. and they're also 13 years apart, but it'll be, you know, a different number of years from ours. So they're kind of staggered in different batches of 13-year cicadas around the country.
How deep down, like when they're underground? I mean, how come they're not dug up or something like that? Are they really, really deep into the ground and then they make their way up, you know, 13 or 17 years later?
Uh-huh. Yeah, they are sometimes dug up, actually. I know of people who have found them in their garden and stuff, but they're associated with tree roots. So typically, they're going to be found on the edges of forests or, you know, wood lines and places like that. But for sure, if you have trees on your property and that tree was growing 13 years ago, there's a strong chance that you have cicadas associated with it, too. But yeah, they're pretty deep down where the roots are, and that's why they're not commonly seen.
Okay, what do cicadas actually do? I mean, are they? They're obviously insects. Do they have a purpose? I mean, is this like something like, because you're with the butterfly house? Are these something like centipedes that, you know, then eventually turn into something, or what do they do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're a little bit different than butterflies and bees because they don't pollinate or do anything like that. They feed on the insides of plants. And the nutrients from plants and stuff like that. And I know as soon as I say that, a lot of people are going to be worried about their plants. But the things they take are so minuscule that they don't cause the death of plants or really don't even make plants sick. So even while these, you know, millions of bugs are out this summer, you don't have to be worried about the plants in your yard unless maybe you have a plant you just put in. And I keep saying plant. I really should be specific to trees because they feed on trees. But if you've just put a tree in the ground like this spring, it might be a good idea to tent it with some hardware fabric or a bird cloth or something like that to keep the cicadas from being able to get to it. But any other plant in your yard is not going to be damaged.
Okay. Well, I saw I've already seen a couple. Okay. So now, but they're like the shell. So what happens now? So they come out and they lose their shell. And then what happens to the rest of them?
They do. So they've been babies underground. They're going to come out and take off that baby skin. They're an insect, and every single insect, big and small, has to shed its skin to grow bigger. It's just how their bodies are built. So the shells you're seeing are the old baby skins, the nymph skins.
Right.
And once they're an adult, they'll never shed that skin again. They're just going to be the adult cicada. But yeah, the skins everyone's finding are without doubt one of the most recognizable things about the cicadas because people are used to seeing those everywhere.
Well, there's like trillions of them. I mean, that's like a heck of a lot. I mean, because you're seeing by like a square mile or no, not a square mile. I mean, it's like a square, like acre. I mean, could have like what, like a billion of these things. I didn't realize there were so many of them. So once they come out, what happens then? I mean, where do they go? I mean, just do they live like with us or what happens to them?
So they're going to be around as adults for maybe 4 to 6 weeks.
Uh-huh.
So expect to, you know, see them flying, hear them singing throughout that time. What they're trying to do is attract a mate so they can lay eggs and go underground for 13 more years. So that's the purpose of the singing. It's a mating call and, you know, competing for space and all the things that, you know, rival males will do. But they're trying to attract a mate. And after that, they're going to lay eggs and die off.
Wow.
So the adult stage is very, very brief compared to 13 years underground as a baby.
Wow. So 13 years they're alive as a baby, and they come out, and then 6 weeks, and that's the whole life. Huh.
That's it. Yeah. Okay.
So we can expect if they're coming out now, so by mid-June or like beginning of July, then this should all be over with?
Yes, it should all be over. I would expect to have the peak of the emergence and, you know, the most singing and stuff end of May to the beginning of June.
Okay. Well, I've seen it in a couple of places, and I don't know how much you know about this, but I mean, different uses for them. There are some people that are making, they're like recipes. I mean, do you know anything about this? I mean, are people actually consuming these?
Yeah. While we know a bit about it here at the Butterfly House, we're actually planning a few events. We can teach people about how to cook them.
Really?
Because they are totally, totally edible. In fact, all around the world, as you know, some people listening may know, insects are commonly on the menu. You know, even here in North America, they're becoming more common as you can easily pick up things like cricket flour,
right,
you know, from lots of food stores around here. So, yeah, you can eat cicadas, and they're delicious. If you like crustaceans, things like shrimp or crabs, you know, cicadas are basically the same thing. They're just not from the ocean.
Okay.
So you can do lots of interesting things with them.
Okay. So are they like shellfish then or something like that, or shrimp you mentioned?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. What's commonly eaten are the ones that have come out of the soil but have not peeled off their skin yet. So they're very, very soft, and they're not going to be crunchy like the adults will be. So those are usually sauteed like scampi or deep fried, and they're very, very much like shrimp or some other kind of shellfish.
Wow. Well, this is all news. I didn't realize this the last time they came out. So if they come out, they're gone by July. When is the next time we can expect to see them?
Yeah. Summer, 13 years from now.
Wow. Would
be okay. The next time you expect to see them.
Okay.
And, of course, you could travel to different parts of the country and see them in, you know, years that are off the cycle from us.
Okay. Well, what's going on at the Butterfly House? Joey and I were talking a little bit off the air about it. What do you got going on? Do you have anything special coming up for the summertime? And for those that don't know about the Butterfly House, tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. So the Butterfly House is open every day of the week except Monday if you just want to come visit us. And we do have a lot of special events this summer. You know, we're having our Firefly and Friends Festival on June 21st. Which is kind of the and friends part means we're going to celebrate fireflies and the other bugs of summer, including the cicadas. Mm-hmm. And during the cicada emergence, we're planning to do lots of cool information about them. We'll bring some inside so people can see them up close and, you know, learn that they're not so scary. We're definitely going to be talking to people just kind of about what's going on with these cicadas, just like you and I have been today.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I appreciate you joining us here and giving us the lowdown on what to expect and what to possibly eat. I don't know if I could, you know, my wife is very adventurous. Well, I know she's not, but I'm adventurous. But I don't know if she'd even take it that far as the cicada goes. But if you say they taste like shrimp, I'm a big shrimp guy. I may try it. Maybe I'll fool her. I'll tell her it is shrimp.
Yeah, give it a try.
Well, maybe. Well, thanks so much. Thanks for joining us, Chris. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Okay. Well, that's Chris Hartley from the Butterfly House on the line here. And I did not ask my question that I was going to ask. I was warned by my wife, who, again, I brought up. And she's come up a lot here. And I think you kind of gave me the stink eye, too. But what I, you know, can I just mention it now?
Because, yeah.
Okay. I didn't say it to him, but I always have just wondered. This is a hypothetical thing, okay? I wouldn't really do it, I don't think. But what would happen if you showed up at the Butterfly House and you just, as a joke, had like a can of Raid, and you think everybody just like freak out?
I think so. They have security guards. I don't know if you've been to the Butterfly House, but when you go into the actual butterfly area, it's double-doored and beaded curtain like it's a sexy 70s shag pad.
Yeah, baby.
And they have guards in there to make sure that you don't have any hitchhikers on you, any
hitchhikers.
Butterflies that stick to you. And I bet you they have weapons on them too.
Well, yeah, because I didn't know they had like
they'll mace you and you'll raid them and you'll both be blind.
So there's butterfly security. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's actually an industry. I mean, that's something you can like grow to be a butterfly security agent.
When you're walking through, the butterflies will sometimes cling onto your clothes.
Cling on,
and then
isn't
when
that
you
like a Star Trek thing?
Yeah, of course, Ferengi, cling on, whatever. And then when you walk out, the beaded curtain is hopefully gonna whack them off of you.
Whack you off. What?
And then there's another guard there just to make sure that the butterflies
finish whacking you off
to finish you off. Before you leave.
It sounds like quite the place.
I heard you and the wife were members of the Swingers Club as well.
No, we weren't, but I guess we are now.
You're
because
members
she became a member of the Botanical Garden, so I guess that by association makes us part of the Butterfly Swingers Club.
I feel bad. I should repent for this to Chris next time we talk to him.
You will.
When I was a little kid, we would take wiffle ball bats, and then we would swing on these fireflies, and then the gooey glow would stick to your bat.
Yeah.
And that's insecticide or murder of an insect, basically.
So you basically took the glowing part out of the bug?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
we
okay.
thought we were so cute, but I feel really bad about that because Chris was such a nice guy.
Chris, yeah, he was a nice guy. You could tell that he kind of like knew his stuff, too. I didn't know anything about cicadas. I mean, the thing, in the 13 years they're alive, can you imagine that? And you come up and boop, you're done 6 weeks later. That's it. It's
time for puberty, and immediately you got acne, and you're shedding your skin.
It's like all over. It's kind of, I'm sorry, but here's the thing. To me, it just creeps me out. It's a little gross, all right? You got these bugs coming out of holes and pores in the soil, and they're, I mean, I got to tell you, I mean, it's something that would give me a bad dream if it weren't a reality.
You got enough problems soiling yourself. You don't want these bugs messing with your underwear, biting holes through
them. I don't have underwear. I told you what happened. I lost my underpants. So if I soil myself, then now what am I going
to
do?
Even if I wanted to get friendly with these bugs and become best friends with them, they're only around 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's just
you got to say goodbye as soon as you. It's a summer fling, is what it is.
What do you have? Like, yeah, summer loving. Hey, mm-hmm. This reminds me of Grease. Were you ever in? Did you ever watch Grease, like the actual stage production?
No, that's a terrible movie, terrible show.
Oh, you didn't like the movie?
They
Grease?
Made us sing the song. That is a specific really? Song in acting class.
Did they?
Mm-hmm.
What acting class was this?
I think we were 15, singing about forcing ourselves
summer
on each other.
Summer days drifting away to a. Oh, those summer nights. Oh, well, oh, well, oh. Okay.
What right. does she say? No, no, no. One of the lines.
Like a lot of the stuff in that I don't think you could get away from. Have you ever heard the lyrics to Grease Lightning? Ooh, I don't think you could even say that on the air. There's a lot of stuff in Grease Lightning that's just greasy bad.
I can't wait to buy Cicada merch is what I'm thinking. Cicada we got to go merch. To the Butterfly House and see if they have big Cicada t-shirts, Cicada hats.
Well, they fly in your face. You need like a cicada net. I remember showing up at a barbecue one time. This must have been, I guess, 13 years ago. This is when I used to be invited to things. And these damn things were like flying in my face and then they were in my hair. I didn't even have the mullet then, okay? So imagine how it's going to be this year. They're going to go burrow for 13 years in my mullet and I'm going to go to my stylist, like the keeper of the mullet, and she's going to say, do you realize you have baby bugs in your mullet? It's going to be, and I'll say, don't worry, they're going to be here for 13 years, then they're going to come out for 6 weeks, and then we're going to eat them. Some people say, well, it reminds me of summertime. No, it doesn't remind me of summertime. It's annoying, okay? And they make that sound, and now they fly around in your face, and I got to tell you.
Oh, terrible. If I was driving right now, I would drive off the road.
Yeah, it's horrible.
I wish someone would stop this.
You know what? You're going to have somebody out there that go, oh, they're so cute. You ever notice that? Something that's really disgusting a bit. No, I think they're cute. No, they're not cute. They're bugs. Okay, well, that's going to do it for us here on The Right Mind Show. And, you know, like I always say, if you don't have a right mind, you don't have a mind at all. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter. To find out about all things Todd, go to studiotodd.com. We will see you next Saturday night at 5 p.m. right here on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL and always streaming online at newstalkstl.com.